smelling them. Fruity and a little bit of something else on you.
There is no alcohol in there.
On your breath, like smell on your breath. Something fruity, like what were you drinking?
There's no alcohol in there.
No? But it's been at least 2 hours?
There's no alcohol in
there. Alrighty, just hop out for me. I'm going to verify, okay?
Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. You can support the Father's Day by going to thefatherstate.tv/donate or locals.com in the description there. I have with me Dakari Lariat. He is a self-proclaimed police brutality survivor, former Whirlpool executive, and founder of the Lariat Aroma Therapy. That's a lot. Is that right, what I said?
That's me.
Amazing. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's so good to be here, Jesse. I appreciate it.
Right on. And so, are you from Africa? How do you get that name?
My mom was very creative. She found it in a baby book. So, Dakari is a Bantu name that means happiness.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm from Alabama.
When you were growing up, did you have a tough time with that name?
No, actually, it's pretty phonetic, I think, for the most part. So people certainly like to make fun of it, as we saw in some of the dash cam with the police officers that we'll talk about a little bit later. But right. I'm very proud of it. I think it's a beautiful name, and it's been mine for 42 years.
Nice. Amazing. And so a little bit about you. You're a Christian?
Well, I was actually raised as a Jehovah's Witness, so I would say the principles for sure, but I don't currently practice a religion.
Oh, you do not? And was it rough being raised as a Jehovah's Witness? That sounds like, because that's a pretty rough religion, right?
It's demanding, and I think it's made me who I am today, actually. I'll say the good thing about it is the community that you have. Growing up, you're going, at least at the time when I was a witness in the 80s and 90s, you're going to service 3 times a week. Now, they've scaled it back since COVID. So that imagine the community you have. It's not once a week that you're going to church. It's 3 times a week, plus proselytizing 2 or 3 times per week and knocking on doors. So imagine the confidence you build knocking on doors, being rejected as a kid.
Yeah, what a mess. How did you get out of it? Because they don't normally let you out.
You do have to resign or get kicked out for some type of wrongdoing. And in college, I think I started to see the world as being a little bit bigger than what I initially saw it as a Jehovah's Witness and as a kid growing up in Alabama. And when I started to see that bigger world, I realized that there were other perspectives, there were other religions. And the thing with Jehovah's Witnesses is they believe that they have the only true religion in the world. Uh-huh. And I no longer believe that. And that's when I submitted my resignation.
Really? And so when you got out of that religion, did your family members and people turn on you?
It was difficult for my mom and my stepdad, because another key driver was that I was also kind of coming into myself as an adult. I realized that I was gay and I wanted to live an authentic life. So I told my parents that I was leaving the religion and explained why. And they were definitely upset at the moment.
That's amazing. And what part of Alabama are you from?
Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, Birmingham. That's amazing.
Yes.
Do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
I'm learning so much more about our existence, Jesse, that it is, I don't know what I don't know right now, but I do strongly believe that there is something amazing that happens after we leave this physical world. And I know this is an unusual topic, but in the last 2 years, I've seen to what I believe to be Ghost. And I just think that there's so many things about this dimension and other dimensions that we just don't know.
And so you've seen two ghosts?
I think so.
And what do they look like?
Well, I'll tell you about the first one, and I have a photo of it. I'll send you a picture after. So the first one, believe it or not, I was in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day, 2022. And I left Cork, which is one of the bigger cities, and went out to Tuath Castle, which I later learned is haunted. And I noticed this weird stream of light hitting my photos as I was riding home from the castle. And I was really bummed out because it messed up my photo. And I zoomed in and I saw what appeared to be the ghost of St. Patrick. And I'll very happy to show you a picture of it. And I sent it to the castle afterward as well.
That's amazing. And were you afraid?
I was stunned to see such a pronounced figure. And normally when you see these images, they're so easy to dismiss as someone's imagination. But this particular image had a face, it had a hat, it had eyes, it had a mouth, it had a body, it had a cape, so much detail to it. And just the fact that the day that I was there, the sky was totally clear. Why was this weird stream hitting this one spot at this one moment? So it was very interesting.
That's amazing, man. What now? So I want to ask you about this lawsuit that you filed earlier this year. You were allegedly a victim of a so-called police brutality, right? And tell us about that.
Sure. So I, at that time, was living in Southwest Michigan in a town called St. Joseph. And I was driving a friend home on April 10th, very early in the morning at 3 a.m. And as I was approaching my friend's home, we noticed the emergency lights come on from the Michigan State Police squad car and pulled over compliantly. And from that point on, it was just an evening of escalation after escalation driven by those police by nothing that my friend and I did in the interaction. So the police accused me initially of some traffic violations, which I denied, and the dash cam video confirms that I followed all traffic laws. Then I was accused of smelling of alcohol in my breath. And of course, I took three blood tests and never had any alcohol in my system at all. Then the troopers accused me of driving under the influence of drugs, in particular marijuana. And of course, I don't drive or use marijuana and drive under the influence of any drugs. So that also came back negative. And I spent 30 to 40 minutes doing sobriety tests in the cold in my pajamas. I even passed the first blood test that they took me to after handcuffing me at the local hospital, passed it on site, and they still jailed me.
Amazing. So you were driving your car in your pajamas? Why were you driving a car in pajamas? Yeah.
Well, it was 3 a.m. It was 3 a.m. and I was dropping a friend off at his house, and I was just going to go home and go back to my house and go to sleep. So he happened to work in healthcare, and he works really early in the morning. And so just wanted to drop him off. But, you know, I always replay the scenarios in my mind, like what could I have done differently, and you know, why did it happen to me? And like you just asked a very great question, Jesse, you know, pajamas, now that this experience has happened to me, this lived experience, I may be averse to running a quick errand in my pajamas, right? Because I don't know if I'm going to get back to my house. One of the things that I felt the most, I guess, nervous about during the interaction was my dog. I was very lucky that night that my dog was in daycare and was able to stay in daycare while I was incarcerated. But normally I would leave my dog at home, run a quick errand, and come back home. So, yeah, there are all these things that can happen when you're taken by the police.
And why did the police stop you? What was the reason?
So specifically, they alleged that I was running red lights, two in particular. And all the dash cam videos proven that to be incorrect.
And so that wasn't unusual for cops to stop people and say that, oh, you ran a light or your tail light is out. And then they search your car, they search you, and they find out, okay, you can go now. You have no whatever, right? That wasn't an unusual thing, right?
Well, I've never been pulled over like that. So 42 years, 20 plus years of driving, I've never had an interaction like that in my life. I kind of just knew what you see on TV. And I thought that by being compliant and agreeable and by submitting to the voluntary sobriety test in the cold in my pajamas, that I would prove myself innocent and that I was not under any influence. But that was not good enough for them. Even going in handcuffs to the hospital, immediately I passed the blood test. That was not good enough. So they jailed me. And in the booking process, they scanned my body and noticed what they called an anomaly. And from there, the trooper escalated again and alleged that I had swallowed narcotics and that there were narcotics in my stomach. And I was required to go to the restroom publicly in that facility.
So you were required to go to the restroom in the jailhouse, and it was open area or something?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I see. And was that a bad thing?
Well, it was humiliating, traumatizing. I certainly believe the police think it's bad because they're suppressing the video.
Oh, really?
And we have been fighting for the FOIA release for 6 months. We were just lucky to get one relatively clean video that has managed to go viral. And I believe that's the one you saw, Jesse. Yeah. But there is so much horror from that night that the police are suppressing unlawfully.
And were these two white cops? Because I saw what looked like one of the cops were black. The police were black, right? One white
One is black and one is white. So the white officer is Trooper George Kenya. I would say he's the ringleader.
Was he the white one or the black one?
He's the white one.
Okay.
And the black cop, Matthew Okai, was fully complicit in the whole interaction. So after 6 months of fighting for the FOIA release, we got the video. And what I did is I shared a link to my Google Drive to my closest friends. And I said, look at this video. Tell me what you see, because it's helpful to have everyone looking. Everyone's looking for different things and hearing different things. And maybe 2 hours after sending the link out, one of my closest friends, in fact, he is the individual that came and picked me up to get my car back the next day, called me in a panic and said, I need you to go to 3:25 a.m. and listen to the interaction there. And what you see is the lead trooper, the white officer, George Kenya, rifling through his squad car. He's looking at the side panel. He's in the back of the car and the back seat, the trunk, looking through boxes. And it's something I would have ignored because I was more focused on the interactions with me directly. And then the black trooper comes around to the back of the car at about 3:27 and asks him, drugs? And then Trooper George Kenya replies, I don't think I have any. I had a stash in here. I don't know where it's at. He's going to refuse anyway. And then that's when they decided to only charge me with drugs and alcohol.
I see. And so because there were black cops, a police officer with the white police officer, you don't believe that it was a race thing or anything. It was just bad bad work, right?
No, it's absolutely a racially profiled stop. So,
and how can it be if they had a black cop there too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think in 2024, racism is very different from how we maybe perceived it 10, 15, 20 years ago. So this is the beauty of receiving access to the video. Before they even stopped me, Jesse, in the dash cam, not the body cam, the dash cam, we can see both troopers making fun of my African name. Trooper Okai, the black officer, pronounces my name with this very exaggerated, ridiculous, humiliating accent.
Maybe it was just hard to pronounce it, the same problem I had with it.
It's not an everyday name. It was quite intentional. True, but it was very intentional. It was said in a comical, humiliating manner, and I'm happy to share that video with you too. Then Trooper Kenya, the white officer, starts calling me Daiquiri. Daiquiri, Daiquiri, Daiquiri. Have you been drinking daiquiris?
Amazing. And so, but I'm under the impression that, and I've been told over and over again, that black people are not racist. And you are black, so why would you think that the black cop would be racist along with the white cop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've heard that argument that black folks cannot be racist. And some people say if you are not part of the racial power that stands, you cannot, for example, participate in racism. And that's 100% false. So people do things for many different reasons. They can prop up racist systems for their personal gain. And I've had this experience both from a policing incident where Trooper Matthew Okai, for his personal survival and for his career growth within Michigan State Police, harasses black people. So my incident was April 10th. I've since been contacted by numerous residents of that town in that vicinity that have had similar experiences. And one individual said Matthew Okai, the black trooper, ran the same routine on her on September 3rd. So we're talking about 2 months ago. He was out there doing the exact same thing. So gaslighting the individual black woman, making her believe that she was intoxicated, putting her through endless sobriety tests. Coincidentally, it happened at 3 a.m. So they are specifically targeting black individuals in this town that's about 80-85% black and quite impoverished, and individuals who cannot then fight back and use a legal system to protect themselves.
And what town is this again?
What's that?
What town is this?
Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Oh, okay. And so you do believe that black people can be a racist as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I was just going to give you an example from my corporate experience. So I've spent 20 years in corporate America rising through the ranks. And I think some of the most challenging individuals I've dealt with, frankly, were minorities and black people in HR. And why is that? Because these individuals get their power through, again, propping up a racist white supremacist organization structure and a patriarchal structure. So these are the same individuals that run sham investigations that never find any wrongdoing for the harassers, who typically are from the majority class. Okay. So that's been my lived experience.
And so rather than call it racism, why not call it what it is? So if this is true, why not just say bad cops? Because you have corrupt people in all areas of life, no matter what you do, right? Why not just call it corrupt bad cops? Why do you have to call it racism?
Oh, I think it's, I think the blanket headline is bad policing. Okay. But we are a nation of laws, right, Jesse? So the laws that are applicable here and the reason that we are seeking a civil judgment is because the law was broken and the laws protect minorities. And that's because we need those protections as we are minorities. So the specific areas that we're suing for involve the racial discrimination, the racial profiling, which have no place in our modern society. And additionally, we didn't talk about this yet, there was obvious homophobia exhibited at the traffic stop as well. So when the troopers came to my car, in particular, George Kenya, the white trooper, made note that he smelled something fruity. There's something fruity in here. I smell something fruity. And that was his opening to get me out of the car.
I know I read that you said you accused one other officer of being homophobic, transphobic, racist, and misogynist, right?
Yes.
Why did you call them all those names? What made you believe that kind of stuff?
Well, my personal interaction, because if I go back to the example of approaching the car with this accusation of fruity, you know, as a gay man raised in the South, that is one of the worst homophobic slurs there is, truly, right after the F word. And all of the tests, all three of the tests that I submitted myself to voluntarily proved that I had absolutely no alcohol in my system. So the question is, where did fruity come from? It was something that he concocted in his mind.
But why?
And when I got out of the
go ahead.
And when I got out of the jail, I scoured the trooper's social media, and that's where I found it. He is 100% a homophobe, racist, misogynistic, and transphobe. And again, I can share those references with you, but I was able to grab about 40 to 50 screenshots from his social media showing his hatred of minorities. And that is included in our lawsuit, our civil lawsuit.
But he was not calling you those names, right? Homophobic. I mean, he was not calling you misogynist and all that. Were you like acting gay or something? How would he know? You don't look gay unless you say you're gay. Why would he think gay? Why did he think you were gay? But you had on pajamas, well, not a dress, right?
I did not. So thank you for the humor. I appreciate that, Jesse. So let me elaborate on that. I was riding in my car at 3 a.m. with another black gay man. And we are very proud and we're happy to be who we are. Okay. So most people would be able to look at the two of us and ascertain that we are gay. We're not trying to hide that. My friend, for example, colors his hair bright colors that many people would associate with the gay community.
Okay.
Okay. So seeing us together at night, possibly holding hands, which we do sometimes, would have been it would have been easy for one to assume that we were gay.
But when the cops stopped you that night, and you're in a car, and you're getting out of the car, why would he just assume you were gay?
Oh, so there was an entire interaction where they stalked the car for about 2 or 3 miles. So they're able to see us in the car. Then they approach the car. And when they approach the car, Trooper Okai, the black officer, was on the right side. And Trooper Kenya was on the left. So they're peering in and they can see the two of us together. They can see our demeanor. They can see our personal style. So again, it's I would say rather easy to ascertain and not something that we hide because we don't need to.
And you say you found all these other things on his website, right? Homophobic, transphobic, yes. Racist, misogynist. What is wrong with him disagreeing with that? Why does it have to be races or wrong that he disagreed with all that? And doesn't he have a right to put it on his website? Everybody else put everything they want on their website. Doesn't he have a right to put it on his website without being called racist or hater or something like that?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, one of our most important rights is free speech. But hate speech is not protected in the same way.
And why not?
And I know we're going through. Well, because we also want to then respect the population, and it's not, especially in a public service role such as his, how can you even be effective if people can't trust that you can be clear-minded and fair as you approach individuals in the public?
But when you call him those names, aren't you being hateful or same as he is? The same thing, because you're calling him homophobic, transphobic, misogynist because he's disagreeing. What's the difference in the way you feel about him and the way he feels about you?
So I would say my assessment is fact-based. So when you treat one person unlawfully or unfairly based upon their demographics, generally that's illegal in our country. And the specific examples screenshotted from his page are quite egregious. So just to kind of help you visualize it, there's one screenshot where actually two where he's saying no homo. There's another screenshot where it's making fun of gays very specifically. There's another screenshot where a trans woman is being discussed and it says, well, she's a guy. Well, she's a woman. She identifies as a woman. And let's respect that. There are so many more. There's one, I think that's probably the most upsetting. The caption says, met the biggest beauty of a crackhead last night, and it's a black woman. So when you see these images again and again and again, so 40 images, you get a sense of how he thinks and how he approaches policing, and it's not from a place of equity.
Oh, so you thought it was wrong. Was he a crackhead?
Well,
was he a
the
crackhead?
Caption of one image. Well, no. You know, I've never used drugs before, but...
No, not you, but the woman that he met, the black woman that was a crackhead. Was she a crackhead?
It was not apparent to me. It did not look that she was using drugs or was a drug user. And it just, you know, it's so upsetting to me because is he assuming that all black people use drugs?
But he didn't say all. You said he said one. He met a black crackhead woman. Have you ever seen a black crackhead woman?
Probably. I lived in New York for 15 years. So.
Yeah. So you seen a black crackhead, right?
What's that?
So you seen a black crackhead woman, right?
I believe that I have. I've
and
seen
so
many.
What's
I'm
wrong
sure.
with him saying a black crackhead? If she was a black, crack-headed woman, I don't know, but if she was, why is it bad that he said it, but you seen it and you said it? I don't understand the difference. No,
I would never post an image of a woman who doesn't look at all to be a drug user and say, I met the biggest beauty of a crackhead last night. That is demeaning. It's rude. It's mean. I would never personally do anything like that.
Right. But suppose, I don't know if it's true or not. Go ahead.
Yeah, and even if the person were, that's not something I would post, right?
So, right. But he
different,
would.
Different sensibilities.
But yes. He would, so that doesn't necessarily make, I mean, he's doing what he does and want to do. It seems as though, whether we agree with it or not, he has a right to do it, right?
Well, that's TBD. So, he did it. He did make those posts. And it's interesting, the timeline around many of the posts is before he was hired for Michigan State Police. So that creates a complicity and a liability for Michigan State Police because he was not properly screened before being employed. And I'll tell you, Jesse, one of my good friends does a psychological analysis for New York City Police. And he said, looking at those 40 images that I was able to screenshot, this guy would never even make it through training. He would not at all be offered a role in New York City's police force.
I got it. Because of time, I want to move a little faster. What did the black police officers say about all this that happened with you and the white cop? And what did he have to say about all this?
His interaction initially, I thought, was going to be a positive. But what I really got from him most of the night, Jesse, was he was just in disbelief that I legitimately owned a Cadillac SUV. And he quizzed me throughout the night about the car.
Was this the black police?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that's correct. Yeah. So he quizzed me throughout the night around my car and like what I do for a living and where I live. And when we received the body and dash cam, I noticed that there was a full minute of audio that cut out of his body cam. And I asked my passenger, my friend, what was that about? Like, what were you guys talking about in that moment? And it confirmed what I already knew. They were unlawfully questioning my passenger if the car truly belonged to me. And it was just apparent the whole night they were obsessed with my Cadillac. So I didn't get very much from Trooper Okai besides that he was propping up a racist system as well.
I got somebody who want to ask. I want to ask if black people didn't have, and not all black, but most, if they didn't have such a bad reputation as far as crime and stealing cars and robbing and killing and aiding white people, do you think they would have been suspicious of you having a car like that if it wasn't known, if blacks didn't already build that type of reputation?
Well, I think that question is a little bit loaded, Jesse. So in this particular county, which is Berrien County, and the cities that this happened, or St. Joseph and Benton Harbor. Benton Harbor is a majority black town. It has an oversized proportion of individuals that are incarcerated relative to the overall population of the county. So I think the perception that black folks commit crimes at a higher rate is probably not true. It's hard to get accurate statistics sometimes. So I want to address that head on. But I think there are many prejudices that are a result of our entire criminal justice system. Yes.
You claim your civil rights were violated. What are civil rights?
Well, the rights that are enshrined in our Constitution. So in particular, I was falsely arrested. Okay. So that's, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't have all of the legal documents in front of me and the terminology that my legal team would. And I'm sure my lawyer would be happy to join and speak to it in particular. But that's really the thrust of the entire matter. It was an illegal search. You think about my submission to the blood. There was no probable cause for me to be stopped. There was no probable cause for me to get out of the car. There was no probable cause for me to submit to the blood test. I passed the blood test. They jailed me anyway. So that is an unlawful incarceration. And a form of slavery. I was shackled. So that's amazing. The thrust of it.
Since we know that there's no such thing as civil rights, why didn't you just say constitutional right were violated? Why did you have to say civil rights Since there's no definition or real meaning for civil rights, it's just made up. Why not call it constitutional rights?
Well, you know, again, I'm not a lawyer, Jesse.
Did your lawyer call it that, or did you call it that?
Well, it's a civil matter, for sure, because we are suing federally.
Right.
And I believe the statutes are based upon the Constitution. But again, like, happy to connect you guys. I know from the moment it didn't feel right, Jesse. I was falsely arrested. I'm 100% sober. I'm an upstanding member of the community trying to drop my buddy off so he can go to work and so I can go to work the next day. I explained the matter included in the lawsuit, and kind of my plain layman's terminology is an affidavit. And then my legal team converted that into a lawsuit. So they can certainly answer more questions about that.
And you agree with me that there's no such thing as civil rights. There are constitutional rights, but there is no such thing as civil rights. And the reason I'm asking, because I noticed that a lot of black people use this idea of civil rights. I mean, yeah, civil rights, when it doesn't even exist. You agree with me that there's no such thing as civil rights, but there are constitutional rights, right?
Well, I don't want to weigh into something I'm not 100% sure on. I'm learning about this as I go. But we do certainly have a Civil Rights Act. So more for me to learn about it before I make a commitment to that or align with you on that particular point, Jesse.
I hear a lot of black people use something called police brutality. I remember really hearing a lot during the attack upon America by the so-called Black Lives Matter people, radical people. They use that a lot, but no one has ever been able to prove there's something called police brutality. Why is that used a lot? Those were used a lot.
So how do you define police brutality? And maybe we can align on the definition.
Well, there's no such thing as police brutality. Like with anything, you have evil people, and you have good people. So you have bad police. Once in a while, you're going to run into bad police as you would bad anybody, right? Why not call it bad police if we know that there's no such thing as police brutality? Why are they using extreme made-up words rather than calling what it is?
Well, I think it's the nature of humanity to evolve language to articulate specificity. And thinking about George Floyd and Philando Castile and all these different incidents that happened over the last 10 years, I guess, we had to kind of create a new vernacular to explain what was happening to those who may not see it in their daily life, right? So I think that's kind of the origin of it. But I think more importantly, it's around how do we address these behaviors and make them stop? Maybe not so much the specifics of terminology.
And so if I'm here, and again, I'm black and slow, so I may be missing it. What you're saying is that they create these words like police brutality and all that to get what they want from the situation, because greater the word is, more impactful the word is, it allows you to get what you want from the situation?
No, I think the way I understand it is we create this language so that we can be more precise and specific about what we're talking about.
But you can't get any more precise than say constitutional violation, or are you invading my constitutional right? It can't be any more specific than that.
Mm. Well, I think sometimes it's helpful to be even more precise, right? When we're talking about something that's so serious and then becomes so prevalent, right? So I think that's kind of the origin. But again, not my area of expertise in particular. I just knew that in my situation, I was tortured. It was 2 hours of terror from the traffic stop to the blood draw at the hospital to the booking. And then I was jailed for another 6 to 7 hours and did not come out of the jail until noon the next day.
Right. And that makes sense. I don't know what happened with that situation, but wouldn't it have been better to say I was tortured, I was treated unfairly, my constitutional rights were violated, and as a result, I want them to pay for this. And wouldn't you have gotten a better result had you said that rather than using words like police brutality? Wouldn't you have gotten more respect and support from the people as you spoke of it as it was, if whatever happened, that it was a civil rights violation rather than a, not civil right, but a constitutional right rather than a police brutality and all that? Wouldn't you get a better result?
I'm not sure. Have you been able to kind of benchmark similar situations and how responsive the politicians and authorities have been based upon the language used?
Well, you can't go with the politicians. The politicians are insane. They're wicked. So you can't trust them. They hunger and thirst after power. But when it comes to police, doctors, sometimes lawyers and things like that, you're going to run into constitutional violations rather than all this other stuff. Who made up the word police brutality? Where did that come from? So they're definitely made up words. Where did they come from?
The origin of it, I would not know, but it's certainly something I'm happy to research and we can talk further about it.
Right on. You asked for $10 million. What the? This case is still ongoing, right?
Yes.
Why so much money? Ain't that much violated in the world.
So, for me, it's not about the money, Jesse. And again,
you go to Bray Ann Arbor, Michigan.
What's that?
You go to Bray Ann Arbor, Michigan with all this money.
Lansing, yes. Lansing's the capital.
Yeah, wherever it's from. Why so much money?
So for me, it's not about money at all. In fact, as I mentioned before, I'm a layman. My contribution to the lawsuit was the affidavit. So I share my experience that evening, that morning, 3 a.m. in the morning, and the 9 hours of terror and torture by the police. And I handed that to my legal team and discussed it with them. And that's what they felt was appropriate to send the right signal that these behaviors cannot happen again and that reform is in fact needed.
And so how did they come up with so much money? How did they come up with $10 million rather than $1 million or half a million? Mm-hmm. How did they come up with $10 million from that incident?
Yeah, it's really a matter of the violation of my rights. And if you read it very carefully, Jesse, it says a minimum of $10 million. So my legal team believes that the damages due me are worth a minimum of $10 million. So we're seeking more.
Whoa. You want more than $10 million? You're going to have more money than Elon Musk.
That's what my legal team thinks is appropriate to send the right signal to Michigan and the state police.
Do you discriminate?
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Do you discriminate?
I want to say no, but I need to understand a little bit more about how you are asking that question. And
okay. You know what it means to discriminate, right? Either discriminate against someone or against something or
yes.
Whatever. Do you discriminate? So, you do?
So I need to understand a little bit more what you mean by it, but I'll answer this, Jesse. My goal in life is not to discriminate against any person, and certainly not in any protected class. So as a corporate executive, for example, I'm responsible for hiring and things of that nature, vendor selection. So in those areas, my goal is never to do that. And as humans, of course, you know, we make mistakes. But I think that was the thrust of your question. Of course, the other things in life where you say, hey, I have a preference for this, I have a preference for that. I like red, I like blue, right? So I think you're speaking more to like protected classes. And no, my goal is not to do that. Of course, we all make mistakes sometimes.
But when you hire people and you're interviewing them, you're looking at their resume, you will have to discriminate in order to get to the best qualified person, right?
No, I think when we say discriminate, and that's why I was asking you to elaborate a little bit more, we're talking more about unlawful biases based upon race, gender, age, things of that nature, right? Now, that's how I'm understanding the question. Now, as we're ascertaining qualifications for a role, we're looking at things like, were they in their last role very shortly? Do they have 10, 15, or 20 years of experience? Do they live within a reasonable commute, right? So those are judgment calls based upon your history, experience, and hiring people and their effectiveness. And then even then, half the time we get it wrong. That's just how it is with hiring.
So you will have to discriminate then, right?
Well, I think I want to be clear. When we discriminate unlawfully, that's one thing. When we are making a judgment call, we're ranking, we're making our preferences known. For example, we work with HR and we'll say, hey, you know, I really want someone who comes from the fashion industry, because I think the fashion industry provides the best experience for this role. So I wouldn't call that discrimination. I would say it's a preference that you think is going to help the individual perform better in the role. And it's not a protected status or anything of that nature.
I want to ask you about, and so are black people a protected status? Oh, let me ask you, hold that thought. Let's say that you hire someone, you're looking for an employee, and you get a person who walk into your office with their resume, and they are a DEI person. And then you get another person walking in who is experienced. They have real experience. They got a job. Would you hire the DEI person or the experienced person? The qualified person?
That's a good question. That's a good question. What is a DEI person,
Jesse? Affirmative action person, like a black person.
I'm still a little unclear. Are you saying a minority or are you saying DEI?
DEI, which means affirmative action, reparation, kind of that. And they just changed the names along the way and they finally came up with DEI. So would you hire, you being a professional businessman, would you hire a DEI person or an experienced person?
Well, it sounds like you're making them incongruent. So are you saying that an individual who has a protected class, a woman, a black person, a disabled person, would be less qualified than someone else?
No, what I'm asking, would you hire, as a professional, would you hire a DEI person or an experienced person?
It's a very difficult question to understand, Jesse. I'm sorry. Probably can't answer that one today.
A DEI person doesn't have to really know anything. They don't have to have experience. They just need to be DEI. Whereas a normal person will have to be experienced. They know the job. They know what they do. They're very good at it. And you had two choices to make. One, a choice between one or the other. Would you hire the DEI person or would you hire the experienced person?
Well, when we're hiring for any role, Jesse, it's about who is most appropriate for the organization and who can do the work.
It's the best qualifier, right?
It's the individual that's most qualified for the work. And I want to be clear, I am not at all co-signing on any assertion that diverse candidates are any less qualified than non-diverse candidates. So I do.
What do you mean by that? Are you saying the DEI person would be as qualified as the experienced person?
Well, I would never call anyone a DEI candidate.
But that's what they call it.
I would say.
Right? That's what they call it. Well, Why would you call it that?
Well, I can only share my experience in 20 years of working on Fortune 500 companies. I've never used that terminology for a candidate. I've never heard a professional human resources counterpart use that terminology. But I will say this, when we think about the overall goals of the organization, and we know statistically diverse organizations outperform non-diverse because you have so many different ideas and lived experiences, right, that you can bring to the table. Many organizations do establish goals for diversity. For example, I worked at Whirlpool, and one of their goals was to improve the percentage and number of Black women in manager plus leadership roles. So that was a specific goal. And it was also a business goal. It was a business goal because they wanted to be more successful by having more and diverse opinions at the table when decisions are made.
And so those Black women that they're hiring, because they're female and because they're Black, wouldn't they be DEI persons? Because they're not as qualified, right? It's only because they're Black and female, right?
No. So let me continue with the example, Jesse. So when an organization, I think very responsibly, decides, hey, we want to diversify our pool of candidates so that we can then have a more diverse employee base that can make better decisions. That's all it is you're opening the funnel, right? So you're saying we historically recruited from this non-diverse college in our town. We no longer only want to recruit there. We want to go to an HBCU. We want to go and reach out to other organizations, maybe an LGBT organization at the campus, because we want to get all these opinions in. We want a bigger pool, right?
But would would you look for the best qualified person, or will you look for in your search like that? Would you look for the best qualified person or would you look for the DEI person?
Well, see, that's where we go back to, we want the pool to be bigger, right?
So it doesn't matter that they're
DEI. You're getting all these candidates in. So you want to get everybody into the pool so you can look and choose who is the most qualified. And so I think a common misconception is that it's an either or. So you've posed this question to me a few times that it's like a DEI candidate or a normal candidate. It's candidates. Let's get all the candidates in the pool and let's choose who's most qualified. And let's give those non-traditional candidates that normally don't get a seat at the table, let's give them an opportunity just to apply and get in the door an interview.
So if I hear you correctly, you're saying let's give the DEI person a chance, even though they're not qualified because they're not capable of rising to the occasion. So you have to give them a chance, and even though they're not qualified for it.
No. So we only hire qualified candidates. We only hire the best in the organizations that I've worked for. So I work for companies like Louis Vuitton, L'Oreal, Whirlpool. So these are like Fortune 500 companies. We only hire the best. But what I'm saying, Jesse, is open the pool. Get as many people as you can with lots of diverse backgrounds and lived experiences. And so I give you a perfect example of myself. I'm interested in running for office now, and something that I've been thinking about. I've been thinking about it for about 10 years, and I feel like this is finally the time for me. I have a unique lived experience. That doesn't make that doesn't mean that I'm a DEI hire or like any less qualified. So I've been the victim of police brutality. I've been the victim of gun violence. I've been held up at gunpoint, Jesse. So
black people,
imagine having someone. What's that?
Were you held at gunpoint by black people?
No. And so just imagine, Jesse, having me in the room discussing public safety. Someone with those lived experiences. Can you really think how many people on Capitol Hill have been held up at gunpoint and a victim of police brutality?
Probably none.
So that's why
because of time, let me ask. I noticed that would you consider black people as this class of people you have to put in with the gays, with this and that? What do you call them? What do you call those people?
Well, we have underrepresented many different names, minorities, underrepresented minorities, protected classes.
Would you consider black people as a protected class of people?
For sure. We're roughly 12-13% of the U.S. population, and we don't have laws in place to ensure equal access to work and housing and everything else. It just won't happen. That's the nature of supremacy.
And so prior to the so-called civil rights movement, which was a horrible thing, and the worst thing that ever happened to the blacks was the civil rights movement, other than abortion. Prior to the civil rights movement, black people were not a protected class, and they did much better than they are doing today as a protected class. What's wrong with the blacks that they need to be a protected class? What's wrong with them?
Well, I wouldn't say that anything's wrong with us.
Well, why do they need to be protected class if there's nothing wrong with them?
Well, no, what I would say is you're protecting a class because it's vulnerable, right?
So why are blacks so vulnerable, though? Why did they become weaker after the civil rights movement than they were prior to the civil movement? What is wrong with the blacks?
Well, I think you're leading with the word weaker, Jesse, but I think we have to take a step back. I have a 96-year-old great aunt, 84-year-old grandmother. Like, I'm used to those stories, Jesse, of them having to shop in the basement of department stores and riding in the back of buses. Like, that's recent history. So that's why we have those protections. And some of it is like very fundamental day-to-day living. And then there are some more, you know, as we get more nuanced in our society and our society evolves, we have to build those protections into the workplace as well.
And so if I hear you correct, you're saying that the reason black people need to be in a protected class because they're just weak and they don't want to shop in the basement and they need, what's wrong with the blacks?
Well, you have a protected class status because of vulnerability, and generally that's based upon you being a minority. So you don't have the critical mass of people necessarily, for example, to guarantee a non-gerrymandered district. So you've got to build these laws so that we can protect those folks and ensure that they have their rights.
What's wrong with the blacks that they can't do what the white man does? Why can't you just do for yourself and create your own job? And why do you need to be in a protected class, always having a handout for the white man to give up his stuff so you can have your stuff? What's wrong with the blacks? And how will they ever overcome if they need to be protected.
I think that is a whole series. That's not even one episode, but there are a lot of generational issues that we're trying to address through these laws as well, and programs and whatnot. But yeah, more to come on that. I think I'd certainly be happy to come back and discuss further. And
okay, absolutely. So let me ask.
Let's get the experts on that have that experience. Let me speak to it in more detail.
Let me ask, were women created to lead or to follow?
Well, so that's so loaded, Jesse. I mean, created, that's the first part, created, evolved, I don't know. Then in terms of lead and follow, I think the last thing I'll leave on that is we all have personal innate abilities that we get from our education, our family, our upbringing. And then I think that there are some biological, maybe advantages sometimes from between genders and different situations. And again, that's speaking to the beauty of diversity in the workplace.
But my question is, were women created to lead or to follow?
I sort of have an issue with created, first of all. And that's a whole nother episode. And then lead and follow, I think, like I said, it really is about those innate abilities, those desires of the individual. And I don't think that you could even make a statement or judgment like that based upon gender. I think that's very, very difficult to do.
Would you ever follow a woman?
Oh, yes. Yes. As I mentioned, some of my best bosses were women. And then, of course, like all of us have amazing stories of grandmothers and mothers that helped raise us. And
And so were they created to lead women? Were they created to lead or to follow?
I really wouldn't know.
You don't know? You really don't know?
I wouldn't.
So you mentioned that you were gay. Do gay people feel like victims as well? They feel like protected class as well? They need to be protected?
Well, I said a little bit earlier that black folks are about 13% of the population.
The gay people.
Some estimates. But,
you said that you,
yes, and then some
estimates. They were protected people too, right?
Yes.
What's wrong some with the gays that they feel like victims? They need to be protected.
So, many people take issue with that word victim, but similarly, black folks were not given, or rather LGBT people were not given equal access to work. If you remember mid-century, folks were losing their jobs in government for coming out and living their truth. So that is why we have protections enshrined in our laws.
Have you ever wondered why did God make the white people smarter, more independent, more creative, innovative than any other race? Because I noticed that the blacks and now the gays, they all seem to look up to the white man to kind of see the right way to go and to take his stuff from him. And have you ever wondered why God made the white people smarter than he did the blacks and others?
Well, how would you arrive at that conclusion? Like what type of analytics?
Because white people are not protected class, right? They're not protected. They're like free, they're innovative, they're creative, and the blacks and others are trying to be like them or get their stuff from them. Have you ever wondered why did God put the white man over everybody?
I have a little bit of concern with the question on that one, Jesse.
Meaning what?
I think you kind of matter-of-factly stated that particular race is superior in terms of intelligence.
Well, everybody else seemed to think so because your people, the blacks, and the gays, and the women, they're all in this protected class together. They got DEI. They need help, right? But the white man is the only one with all the help to give them. And so everybody looking up to the white man and white people to give it to them. So it has to mean that white people are superior to the blacks and others, right?
Well, I would not say superior or more intelligent. As
well, why are you trying to get their stuff then? Why are you looking up to them saying that you have made me a protected class, I'm a DEI person? If you don't believe they're superior, why do the blacks and others treat them that way, the whites?
So as I understand it, Jesse, again, I don't want to go farther than I'm, you know, accomplished to speak, but what we find is many institutional norms and just kind of the inertia of our society has allowed white men to thrive in a way that women and black folks and LGBT people have not. So a lot of these laws are around making everyone access, giving everyone access, right? For example, giving women the right to vote. And, you know, that's a relatively...
Which was a horrible mistake. Don't you agree?
What's that?
That was a horrible mistake to give women the right to vote, right?
Well, I think, as I've said a little bit earlier, diversity is key to success of this country.
No, it doesn't work. Have you noticed that ever since we allowed the diversity thing to happen, everything is awful. Service is awful. Attitudes are awful. Crime everywhere. Everybody's screwed up because of diversity. It never has and never will work. Don't you agree?
Oh, I couldn't agree with that, Jesse.
Why not?
I have not seen that in the evidence, frankly.
Amazing. So should men be allowed to play in women's sports?
You know, that's been a hot topic. And again, I'm not an expert on all of these topics, Jesse. I'll probably stay out of that one.
But you don't
I
know.
Honestly, if, don't even know.
You'd have to be an expert to know if men should be allowed to play in women's sport. You don't just know for yourself if they should or not.
Well, I think it's been a very hot topic, and I kind of know where you're going with the question.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just asking the question.
Well,
I'm asking you a simple question. Should men be allowed to play in women's sport? It's a yes or no.
Yeah, I want to be clear before I answer, especially as a member of the LGBT community. Trans women are a different thing from men. And so I don't want to get into it today, Jesse. You know, I really want to respect those who have the expertise in the area.
So you don't know for yourself, common sense, if men should be allowed to play in women's sports or not?
No, I'm not weighing into it today.
Oh, I see. Should women be allowed to play in men's sports?
Same answer, Jesse.
Do you support abortion?
In what regard, Jesse?
Period.
You know, again, it's an area where I don't have the most lived experience, and I think that it's important that those who have the expertise speak to it. And what I know with my limited experience is that it's important healthcare for some women. And, you know, again, I won't weigh into trimesters and specifics and things of that nature, but
well, I'm just simply asking, do you support abortion?
I think it's important that women have access to abortion healthcare.
So you do support abortion?
Yeah.
Are you saying yes, you support abortion? I'm sorry?
What's that?
Are you saying yes, you do support abortion?
Well, I think that's a very broad question, Jesse, and It's a very charged one. So what I'll leave it as is women should have access to abortion health care. And they need to make women decisions the right, with their doctors.
Who gave women the right to have access to killing a man's children in the womb? How did they get that right?
I'm not an expert in that space, Jesse.
Oh, okay. So listen, I got to put you on the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible, all right? All right?
I'll do my best.
All right.
The hot seat.
Which is scarier, a traffic stop or a family reunion?
Traffic stop. I love my family.
Do we need more white babies?
Pass.
What is a man?
It's one of those things where you see it and you know it when you see it.
And so what is it? A man.
It's more than a one-sentence answer. You know it when you see it.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I have. I've seen two.
Do you love white people?
Yes.
Is it wrong for black men to love the Confederate flag?
That is a very bad symbol of where this country was. So I think no one, let alone black men, should love that flag and what it stands for.
Does a chicken have lips?
It has a beak, so I'm going to say no.
Who got it worse, Rodney King or George Floyd?
Well, George Floyd was unlived, so of course, George Floyd.
Is climate change real?
Yes.
Does the bear shit in the woods?
Yes.
True or false? Sending your child to a public school is child abuse.
Oh, I went to the number 7 ranked public school in America, so I can't agree wholly that that is abuse. Absolutely not.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
The proper answer is no, but when you're close to people, sometimes you can say certain things in jest.
Did you vote for the great white hope?
Do you mean Donald Trump?
That's the only great white hope around.
I think you can assume I did not, but I love our democracy. I attended Trump's first inauguration. I'm going to attend the second one. So I believe in the peaceful transfer of power, and I will work with the administration, hopefully, in my next capacity in government as much as I can, and I will resist when I need to.
Why didn't you vote for him?
Well, in terms of principles and values, that was not the right decision for me.
You voted for Camilla?
Kamala Harris, yes, I did.
But she has none of those things.
Think that's debatable, but that was my decision.
Amazing. Did you have fun?
Today, yes. Thank you. It was very interesting. It was very creative. Appreciate the opportunity, Jesse.
Right on. Tell the folks how to get to your website or whatever information you want to put out there.
Yes. So you can find me on social media under Dakari Lariat, as depicted here under my image. And I'm on all the platforms. Please engage with me and Looking forward to some robust discussion. And thank you again, Jesse, for the opportunity today.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to support the Fall Estate by going to thefallestate.tv/donate or locals in the description, locals.com. Like, follow, ring the bell, subscribe, telephone, telegraph, tell a woman. And if you have any other guests you'd like to see on the show, let my producer know, producer@thefallestate.tv. And thank you all again for tuning in. Thank you, man. I definitely appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.